There was a news announcer the other day, and he said that for those of us who were believers, probably saw this on TV, and had faith, it was obvious that God actually intervened in that assassination attempt of former President Donald Trump. That happened just a little while ago. And then another guy came on, another network, and he said, that was ridiculous. He says, people, we're living in 2024. Really? You're going to say those kinds of things? And I thought, wow. But then I thought, wow, about the believer thing. What about that? So I have to ask, who are the believers? Is it the Muslim fellow out there that said, you know, that something happened, that the bullet moved and didn't hit him in the head? What? Well, they say, at the same time, those believers have faith. Well, faith in what? Or who? Can you just say that you have faith? And then in a lot of Christian churches, and I say Christian like this, at the end of services, if you've ever attended any other church, you'll have sometime a really enthusiastic minister, and he's just preaching and pulling and talking. And at the end, what does he do? He hopes that he can make a plea for anybody who's been kind of touched or emotionally brought up to a point to come forward and confess his or her faith and be baptized. It doesn't matter your age or anything else, just that you feel that you're ready to make that commitment. Is this what God intends for us to show, what our belief is, how it is? Let's kind of look at what belief is that we know, the kind of belief we know, what it really is. As you know, I use a lot of scriptures. I love to do that. Let's go to Numbers, if you would, Numbers 14. My theory is the more scriptures you have, the less of the person is in it. So we'll go to Numbers 14 and verse 11. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? I wonder if he looks around now, even at us, but especially the people in the United States who are on the cusp of, you know, in God we trust, on the cusp of just about stuff. And he says, how long are you going to provoke me? And how about us, where we let ourselves go backwards, just backslide? We know we're doing it, but we just do it. He says, how long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me? Wow, there's that word again. For all the signs which I have showed among them. If nothing else, for the things that he showed them. Let's go ahead there to Deuteronomy's 1. Deuteronomy 1. I don't know what a bunch of Deuteronomies look like, but Deuteronomy 1. In verse 30. Where'd it go? There we go. And the Lord your God, which goes before you, he shall fight for you. Well, who's he going to fight for? He's going to fight for those that actually are, well, believe who he is. And we're going to find out what that word really means. According to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in our case, how many things has he done in your life? And I'm talking to us here now, that you know was from God. Even, and some of the kids say, well, you know, that hadn't happened to me. But if you really, I started discovering what was happened, that happened the older I got. I'd look back and say, wow, that happened and I didn't get killed. I was told not to do that. I did it anyway and I almost got killed, but you know, before I hit the ground, something happened. So we all have these in our lives, and you just need to give credit where credit's due. I know a fellow in Joplin, his wife was having a terrible time with her surgeries, and he said before this action, it was all done and said, and she came through it okay, he counted 200 small miracles that he could attribute to God. Now, we need to really think about those things, because I think as we read a couple of weeks ago, I think when we were here in Psalms, that we used to talk about us thinking of God, and it says in the Psalm that God's continually thinking of you. How many times can God think of you? Here's the most powerful being in the world, all-knowing. How many times does he think of you? And he wants you to go somewhere and be somewhere and something good to happen to you. And he wants that for all mankind, just a few that he lets know now. So it says here, he shall fight for you according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where he would have been, how that the Lord your God bore you as a man does bear his son in all the way that you went until you came to this place. Believe it or not, where you are in your life right now is exactly where you need to be. Keep thinking. I know as a young kid, I think, wouldn't it be great to have been in the Western times or be a pioneer and go across? Well, you know what? I think in your particular life, and God is raising his children, he knew that with your personality and who you are, you need to be right here, right now, for these things to happen. And when somebody knows exactly, it's not like people said, whoops, I'm having a child. God knows his family. He knows who we are. And he knows what's going to happen. And he wants the best for us all. And he says, yet in this thing, you did not believe the Lord your God. Believe again. Let's go to Isaiah 43. Isaiah 43. Where are we? There you go. Isaiah 43 and starting verse 8. Isaiah 43, 8. Bring forth the blind people that have eyes and the deaf that have ears. Let all the nations be gathered together and let the people be assembled. Who among them can declare this and show us former things? Who knows everything? And let them bring forth their witnesses that they may be justified, or let them hear and say, it's the truth. You are my witnesses, says the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me, and understand that I am he, and before me there was no God formed, neither shall there be after me. That word believe in the Old Testament is aman, A-M-A-N, aman. It means to render firm or faithful, to trust, to be permanent or quiet, to go to the right, to be dependable, to depend upon. In the King James translation, believe, bring up, establish, of long continuance, steadfast. Well, the word believe suggests that being faithful for a long or permanent time, not just a little bit. And this is a key. It's for the long haul. That kind of eliminates, doesn't it, that young person that walks down to the front of the congregation for those 10 minutes and says, dunk me in, I'm ready. It's nothing like that at all, is it? We know it's not. We know it's a lot more than that. In the beginning, God worked with man to create and nurture and to teach him. With those, even those Israelites of old that were inclined to follow God, he asked the questions about belief from the very beginning. God wants to know what it's going to take before men believe him. What will it take before you totally believe him? We know the word belief is more powerful than just acknowledging God exists. And he asked, remember, how long will it be before they believe me for all the signs that I've showed them? How many miracles, how many interventions God must make before man accepts the conditions God has put down for his people? Jesus used the same reasoning when talking with his disciples. You would think of all the people that were with him, or that got in the world that got to be with him, he wouldn't have to ask his disciples this same question. These were the men chosen to represent Jesus, to be a disciple. Let's go to John 14. And John 14 and verse 9. It says, Jesus said unto them, have I been so long with you? He's talking to Philip. And yet, have you not known me? Come on, guys. We've eaten together. We've slept in the same places. We're walking around the country together. How long has it been? And you don't know me? Philip, he that has seen me has seen the Father. And now you say, show us the Father. Believe not that thou not that I am the Father. I'm in the Father, and the Father is in me. They were in complete agreement. The words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwells in me. He does the works. So he's saying, I'm just the messenger here, but you know who the Father is because of me. And then he says in verse 11, believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very work's sake. Now in the New Testament, the word believe is pisteo, P-I-S-T-E-U-O, pisteo. And it means to have faith in respect to a person or a thing, especially one's spiritual well-being. In King James translation, to trust, to put in trust with. So will you do this as long as you live? And will it be permanent? That's what he's asking. He kept saying, come on, you, by now you should believe me, Philip. You should be wanting to be exactly like I am and do the things that I'm telling you we need to do. And if not me, then believe the things that you see me do. We know God finally states that miracles really aren't the key, that he can show men. If you look in Luke 16, the parable of the Lazarus and the rich man, I think it's verse 21 or so, and then the rich man said, just tell them what's happening. He's about to be cast into the lake of fire. Tell them all. Well, they said, there's a gulf between us, which means there's a time gap here. You died maybe 1,000 years ago, I don't know, but there's no going and telling these people. And then it said, if they didn't believe Moses for the things that happened, they aren't going to believe you. Isn't that amazing? But how many in the United States have already forgotten what happened with our former president? They called it a hoax. They said it was rough, not real. They said, and I've watched that video over and over, and there was no reason for him to move his head like he did. There just wasn't. And so you see that I think, too, that God's setting him up, maybe putting him in that position. I don't know if it's for good or for bad. We don't know. We have to. That's why we don't vote, because we know that we don't want to vote against what God says. You know, it looks like this is going to happen, but it may be just the opposite. That's the way God is. It's going to be real interesting to see how what happens to our country here in not too short a time, especially the way that it's going right now, isn't it? And God stated that miracles really aren't necessarily going to be the key. There's got to have something else. And he's given it to us. And that's his spirit. So we can see these things and, oh, recognize it right away. That's from God. It really is from God. He's still here. He's still in charge. I don't have to worry. I go along and do the best that I can. We're told that in the end times, things are going to appear miraculous. And that those things, those miracles, can be from the wrong source, and they're going to be misleading. We have to watch out and see the source of it. That's going to be a test for all of us, because it says even the very elect are going to be fooled if they're not careful. So the first point about belief is this. Number one, appearances are deceiving. You know, Israel kept the Sabbath. They were known as the people of God. That's what everybody in the whole world thought. Right now, when you think of Jerusalem, when you think of the Jews over there, what do you think of? We know that the whole Bible is written from the viewpoint of the Jews in Jerusalem. We still think of them as God's people. Who, you think that they're, except for a few staunch Jewish people, do you think they're all keeping the Sabbath over there right now? They're God's people. And he's still got his eye on him. He still has his hand around him. He's got a lot of prophecy about him being surrounded and being in trouble. And let me tell you, they're being surrounded right now, and they're in trouble. But they were known as the people of God then and now. And God told Pharaoh over and over again that these people are my people. And he makes it clear that he felt that they were his own. In Leviticus, if you go to Leviticus 26, Leviticus 26, Leviticus 26 and verse 1. This is what he had to tell them, his people, the ones that he called his own. Leviticus 26, 1. You shall make you no idols or graven images, neither rear you up a standing image, neither shall you set up any image of stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. But they were doing it. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I'll give you rain in due season. And the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. These are his people he had to tell. And it turns out that, you know, when Moses went up for 40 days, what'd they do? They made a golden calf. And they were carrying these idols with them, even when they were traveling. It's just amazing how people are. What are we carrying? What are we carrying in place of that? That we would rather, it's more important, that we'll jeopardize everything because we need to do this instead of maybe the Sabbath that day or whatever. God promised them crops that would overlap in season before they can complete the threshing or the picking. A new crop would already be ready. That's what he promised them. And he would protect them from war, wild animals, and that they would bear many children. Everything would go well. Look, drop down again to verse 12 here in Leviticus. It says, I'll walk among you, and I'll be your God, and you'll be my people. He's still telling us that. And I often wonder, of the people that are in the ecclesia, the church, they call the church of God, wherever they are, if they would all be the best they could be and not compromise, what would God do for them? Remember Abraham asked it, what would you do for 15, 10, 5? What would you do? You know, he's promised a lot of things to people that he did promise. Well, I'll keep you and keep you safe in the end times. I'll keep you, put you in a place of safety. I wonder how that's all going to shake out. It's just going to be kind of amazing, isn't it? But they didn't really believe him, and it wasn't for the long haul. Look in Acts 7. Acts 7. Keep going way up and way back, don't I? Acts 7. Okay, verse 37. This is that Moses which said unto the children of Abram, of Israel, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren. Like unto me, him shall you hear. This is he that was in the church in the wilderness. I thought that was really interesting. He would say the church in the wilderness. They were already a selected people in ecclesia then, in the wilderness, with the angel which spoke to him in Mount Sinai and with our fathers, who received the lively oracles to give unto us, to whom our fathers wouldn't obey, but thrust him from them, and in their hearts turned back again to Egypt. So remember, they rejected what Moses brought them. Verse 42 down here. Then God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of the prophets, O you house of Israel, have you offered to me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness. Remember he said he didn't really want the sacrifices. He wanted their hearts. He wanted them to obey him. But until his son came, they did have to do this. And it was just, for some, just going through the motions. Verse 43, yea, you took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god Rimphan, figures which you made to worship them, and I'll carry you away beyond Babylon. They still had them. Though Israel seemed to obey for a while, they just always held something back and carried it with them as they journeyed through the wilderness. I can think you can see now that this world believe is much more than just going through the motions. God stayed with Israel for 40 years and worked with them and taught them. And in the end, most did not believe him, and they didn't make it into the promised land. Yeah, they kept the Sabbath. They did. They didn't work on that day. But did they really keep it? And they kept his commandments. But did they really keep them? God said, you sacrificed and gave me offerings for 40 years. But did you really believe me? They were hot and then they were cold. They carried their idols with them, would claim that they would obey God. And then when something happened, they went back to remembering Egypt. Remember, why did you bring us out here to let us starve? Why did you bring us out here to let us be die of thirst? And they would go back to the golden calf or other idols. Let's go to Ezekiel 33. Oh, that's right, Ezekiel 33. I was headed to Exodus. Ezekiel 33. Verse 30. Also, thou son of man, the children of your people still are talking against you by the walls and in the doors of the houses, and speak one to another, everyone to his brother, saying, come, I pray you, and hear what is the word that comes forth from the Lord. And they come unto thee as the people come, and they sit before you as my people, and they hear your words, but they won't do them. For their mouth they show much love, but their heart goes after covetousness. And lo, you are unto them as a very lovely song of one that has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument, for they hear your words, but they don't do them. We see the same things today. Have you seen people who post some of the most eloquent notes? I see them on Facebook all the time. There was a quote, I just saw this, it was, remember the verse, Proverbs 25:28. I look at that translation, I thought, wow, did it really say that? And I went and opened my Bible, and it didn't say that. They had interpreted it that way, but that isn't what it said. So I've learned a long time ago, when some of these things seem to be dripping with things as you read it, you know, dripping with emotion, to maybe move on. You just don't know what the person's really thinking. After you read those insightful notes, you realize that the person who sent it totally acts contrary to what they sent out. And they were impressed with words, but they don't even know how to keep the meaning of the words. With their mouths, they profess love or loyalty and wish everybody have a great Sabbath. How many of those have you seen? Have a great Sabbath, have a great Sabbath. But they break it themselves. It's easy to see this in others, but if we can only back away a little, we can also see it in ourselves to one extent or another. And that's what we need to be careful of, because in the end, what happens to you, it does not depend on your wife. It doesn't depend on your father. It doesn't depend on your mother. God is going to just deal with you. Just you. So that's really, in one sense, scary. Learn all you can from everybody you can, so you're headed in the right direction. Point number two, believing is easy if it's real to you. Believing is easy if it's real to you. Have you ever noticed a person that really is tough? The guys in here, sometimes you just are standing next to somebody and think, whoa, I would not tangle with this person. Just this guy is tough. Sometimes they're not, they're huge, and sometimes they're not, but you look at them and think, I always said myself when I was working and doing things in construction, never pick a fight with a concrete man. They work, and I think they could accidentally knock you out. They can handle maybe two or more guys at the same time. And usually this type of person doesn't have to make a claim that they're tough. You just know it. And the same is with a smart person. A person that has been given intelligence usually does not have to tell everybody they're intelligent. And I've dealt with people, including bosses, who used to say to me in groups, oh, you guys, you better listen to me. I've forgotten more than you'll ever learn. I'm thinking, okay, let's see how this goes. You know, that kind of person. But one who is intelligent, they just are. They just have it. Soon everybody knows that person is intelligent. And if someone has to go in and brag how smart they are, well, they're usually not. The same is true of believing God. If what God says to you is real, and you not only live by it, you parents, if you are convincing your kids every day that this is really why you're here, and you really believe it, and you're going to live by it, and you want them to have the same thing, and that's what your life is tuned to, they're going to believe, well, this is what my dad believes. And sooner or later, they're going to say, well, what do I believe? Really, what do I believe? It's tough being a parent. It really is, because the family lives with you all the time. Same with husbands and wives. I say that with a grin. Well, if what God says to you is real, and you not only live but are totally convicted by it, then the following that God is not hard, because that's what you want to do. You also will keep doing it because you do believe it. Now we get to that word, the long haul, really understanding what this is, doing it. You obey for the long haul. Others can see it in you too. They just can. It doesn't have to be said. David understood it. And some of his verses are so simple, and yet they have the depth of meaning that will show this. In Psalm 16, in verse 8. Psalm 16. In verse 8. He says, I have set the Lord always before me. He believes it. He lives it. That's how he acts. I have set the Lord before me. Because he's at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Since that's the what I follow, I'm not going to change. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh also shall rest in hope. So there's a benefit to this. If you're really doing these things, and you're looking and seeing God in your life, you get a benefit from it. In verse 10, for thou wilt not leave my soul in hell. It won't leave me in the ground. You're going to do something with me. And he always, along with Job, said, I can't wait for my change. Neither will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life. And in your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. That takes some really understanding, studying, getting close to God so you can feel this and live this way. And it's a level of belief that is not for the short haul. David really found it. I know it's said often, but when you forget to study or forget to pray for just a day or two, things do start to happen, don't they? They're subtle, and soon you're not driven to study or pray. Then you also lose your urgency of having to know more. You know, everything gets less and less important. Soon your belief is short, and your obedience is just by your lips, just as we read, because you know what you should do, but you're not doing it. Psalm 119 and verse 77, I'm just going to read it. Psalm 119, 77. Let thy tender mercies come to me, that I may live, for your law is my delight. Now, I remember when I was younger, I'd think, what good is it doing to go back in Exodus 20 and keep reading the commandments? Well, it's more than that. It's not only, it's all the little tendrils. Go in Matthew 5, and he says, well, you know what, it's not just the act, it's what you're thinking. Now go back and read the commandment and think, oh, well, I'm not supposed to have any of God's before me. Well, I don't worship it. Well, wait a minute, that car, I got to have that car. Has that become too important? You realize you got to put some things down so that you keep God where he needs to be. That's what we do. If we stay in it, make our study habits constant, then we can capture that belief again. It takes time, though, it does. And in time, living by the law becomes a delight, and we would rather do it than not. I remember when the Sabbath was hard. Now I do everything to get here, no matter what I can do, I try. And if I'm somewhere else, I still try to do it, keep the Sabbath day, you know, by listening to something or doing something. That's what we want to do. How does it come to us and stick with us? Well, How does this happen? Point number three. Belief comes from understanding. Belief comes from understanding. In Psalms 119, we'll go ahead and turn to Psalm 119. Oops. That's the big psalm. Psalm 119, verse 34. Give me understanding, it says, and I'll keep your law. Now, what's he doing? Trying to make a deal? Or does he understand what this means? Well, he understands that if I have your understanding, I can keep your law because I understand it. Yea, I will observe it with my whole heart. So we need to ask God for that. Give me understanding. Psalm 119, verse 15. Verse 15. And I will meditate in your precepts and have respect to your ways. I will delight myself in your statutes, and I will not forget your word. Deal bountifully with your servant, that I may live and keep your word. In other words, if you can have a life that's relatively trouble-free, so you can really concentrate on these things, it's better for you. So he's saying, can you make it so that I can continue to concentrate? I'm not afflicted with other things. Again, we're all going to go through a time when we are. When you get sick or things happen and you haven't been able to do things, but you can't. You're just laying there. What are you going to do? Verse 18. Open you thou my eyes that I may behold wondrous things out of your law. That's what it says. We've got to keep in there. Once we understand, we read, study the law, and from there comes a lasting belief. Let's go down to verse 73. Your hands have made me and fashioned me. You don't think he knows you're going to be one of his children? Do you think God has unplanned children? Give me understanding that I may learn your commandments. Well, we've seen something about understanding and that it gives way to belief. Well, how do we get that? Point number four, understanding comes from God. Isn't it amazing? He didn't put us here and say, yeah. Like I remember my first job as a mechanic. I can't make sure I had a toolbox. I had to go buy tools. I continually bought tools. And wherever I worked, they had specialty tools that I had to buy. God doesn't work that way. He throws us on this earth with nothing. And he says, look what I'm going to give you. Everything that you need. It's interesting that everything we need to overcome and find favor in the sight of God, it comes from God. The only thing God asks of us is to see what he gives us, or to use what he gives us, and to hang on to it in belief. In Job, that's just before Psalms here, Job 32. In verse 8. So we got baptized, most of us, and some people will. And it says here, Job 32, verse 8, but there is a spirit in man, and the inspiration of the Almighty gives him understanding. First, you're given the spirit of a man. We all have that. That's why we're people. We think like people. We do people things. And then to go with that, God's spirit's made so it locks with us. That's what he did on purpose. He can't lock with the spirit of a dog or a cat. He didn't build them that way. But we have that. And so it says, but there's a spirit in man, and the inspiration of the Almighty, God gives you some of his spirit, gives him understanding. Well, we just read a couple of verses in Psalms, and did you notice most of those verses ask God to open our eyes and give us this understanding because it comes from God. We need to ask for it. This is so important that the Creator of all things put this up here with the miracles of the creation. Job 38, go to Job 38 and verse 34. Can you lift up, it says in Job 38, 34, can you lift up your voice to the clouds and that the abundance of water may cover you? I've been fortunate enough to get a pilot's license and have an airplane, and I've flown in the clouds. Sometimes it was a mistake. remember this one cloud. It was just a dinky cloud, maybe no bigger than this room. And the guy who was my instructor was with me. I said, I want to go through that cloud. He says, okay. He looked at me, and I thought, what's he trying to say? It had a little tail on that cloud, just a little tail. So we went in there, and whoosh, the airplane turned sideways. And he laughed, and he said, I let you go through it because it was a small one. But he says, a cloud has as much power in it as an atom bomb. And he says, you need to watch what it looks like. Yeah, there's some little puffy ones that you can go through, but it had a little tail on it. Told me there's a little wind coming through that cloud. So here, can you lift up your voice to the clouds? Here we sit on the ground and look up there. That the abundance of water will cover you. Can you make that water come out? Can you send lightnings that they may go and say unto you, here we are? What kind of power is that? Verse 36, who has put wisdom in the inward parts? Who did all this? Or who has given understanding to the heart? Who does that? Who can number the clouds in wisdom? Or who can stay the bottles of heaven when the dust grows into hardness and the clods cleave fast together? Who is that being? It's God. Would you think that wisdom and understanding were this important to God? Well, it is. And here's why. Since the whole purpose for our creation is to enter that family, that's why he made all this stuff. There wasn't just a random creation. He had a purpose in it from the very start, before he started. And we know how much power and consideration it took for the creation. Well, we don't. We try to imagine it. To understand how to obey and believe God is on the same level, according to God, as the wonders of the creation. He showed us that becoming a member of the God family is the reason for all of this creation. And it makes sense that having understanding, which leads to permanent belief or faith, is more important than the creation itself. The fifth point, we ask God for it, and the understanding comes by the way of his Holy Spirit. We ask God for it, and that understanding comes by the Holy Spirit. Now, that isn't to say that somebody who is asking something in the right way to a God who doesn't understand who God is, that he doesn't give him a little of that spirit. That's how you were first attached. That's what led you along to the point where you got baptized. You weren't baptized yet. Young people, that's what happens. You start reading these words and they make sense to you. And you start to talk to your friend at school and show them these things and they look at you like, are you nuts? Where does it say that? How does it say that? Well, I know it does, and it makes sense to you. God put that spirit in you. He's bringing you along. It's really important because he does work that way. Let's go to John 14. John's a good book. It has a lot of how Jesus and God are together. John 14, verse 26. We read this at Passover. But the Comforter, it says, which is the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, it shall teach you all things and bring all things to your remembrance whatsoever I have said unto you. That Spirit, it's given to us. It wasn't even available to Israel. Israel promised understanding which would lead to belief as well, but they didn't even seek it or keep it. Without God's Spirit, it's kind of hard to do. In Proverbs 4, and verse 1, it says, hear you children, it'd be good to go there, Proverbs 4, 1. Hear you children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake you not my law. Remember, understanding the law leads to belief, long-lasting belief, we know that. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let your heart retain my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom and get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not. and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. It's important to God. Now we know. Point number 6. Belief leads to salvation. That sounds logical. Belief leads to salvation. If you're doing these things, what's the end result? Now that we have a background about belief and understanding, I want to read one of the most quoted scriptures of the Bible. I remember seeing it painted on the side of buses in the 60s, benches, trees, hanging everywhere. John 3:16 is where it started. They only just read the one verse, so we're going to read more than that. John 3:16. Let's go to John 3:16. I forgot to turn there while I was talking to you. John 3:16. There we go. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes. Okay, this is different. Everybody says, oh yeah, just say you believe that he existed. No, we know about belief now. In him, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Well, this belief, this understanding, this wisdom in keeping the law and keeping the commandments and doing those things will lead to everlasting life, but it's still a gift. God gives you everything, even that. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. How many times have you thought, boy, God really threw this one in to try to trip me up on this time, didn't he? That isn't what's happening. He wants you to be better. He's not doing things to bring you down. They don't stand up there in the heavens, he and his Son, and say, oh, made him fall that time, didn't we? We got him. I knew he'd go for it. That isn't what they're doing. It says that the world through him might be saved. He that believes on him is not condemned. But he that believes not is condemned already, because he's not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that the light is come into the world, and the men love darkness rather than that light, because their deeds were evil. In verse 20, for everyone that does evil hates the light, neither comes to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. Have you ever noticed that? If you're doing something with a group, and you think, I'm not going to do that. That's not right. All of a sudden, they back away from you. What's the matter with you? We're all doing this. That's the way it is. It says that evil hates the light. Verse 21, but he that does truth comes to the light, and that his deeds may be made steadfast, that they are wrought in God. Belief is not just accepting or even accepting for the long haul. Belief is shown by doing. It results in action that demonstrates that belief, because the person believes and he acts on something because they think it's true. And because it's true, they want to do it. Because they do it, want to do it, they do it. And this will continue. They'll continue doing this because it's permanent. And the concern today is for those of us who are in this church, the ecclesia, not this building, not anything like that, but this group of people, sanctified, set apart. We're supposed to have knowledge. And it's a lot different when someone sins who has no idea what sin is, or that stands in a radio broadcast and says, to you believers, I believe God did this. Well, that person might, but they're just, I would love to sit down with some of them and say, do you really understand, you know, who you are? Because they don't. Then what God is doing to you, for you, and through you. And same with us. Our belief has to be strong and keep us from sinning. Remember, it's not sin if we're tempted, but you don't give in to it. That's a key point. Let's look in James 1. James 1. Verse 12. James 1:12. It says, blessed is the man that endures temptation, For when he's tried, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to them that love him. You may have things that tempt you. They really do. You're blessed if you're tempted. Really? Well, more so, well, let's read on. Let no man say when he's tempted, I'm tempted of God. For God can't be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. But he allows things to happen. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts and enticed. So that's the first way to avoid it. Keep control of yourself. Make sure that you're not enticed. If you see something, oh, I'm headed for trouble here, go the other way. But if you're in there and you get tempted, then it says, then when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. So you can get into the middle of that and not sin. Then you won. You didn't give in to sin. That's why Jesus Christ had to suffer things and go through things. He never sinned. It wasn't that he never sinned because it never presented itself. He had to overcome it. And he did. When you endure temptation, that means you endure it and you didn't give in. You're only tempted when you're drawn away of your own lust. If you don't have that lust, you're not tempted. Still, it's not a sin until your lust conceives, or you turn your back on belief and you go ahead with it, and you sin. That's sin. Seventh point. God asks if there's going to be any belief when Jesus Christ returns. Is there going to be any belief when Jesus Christ returns? As we get closer to the end of this age, we will see the security and the peace of this nation collapse. We're all going to see it. We don't know who our neighbors are in our big cities. I lived in a big city in California a lot of my life. Didn't know who was next door. Nobody wanted to know. They didn't want to know who I was either. Unless their dog came at my place or my dog went on their place. And usually it wasn't pleasant. We didn't know our neighbors. Here in the small cities, it's not that way. You do know people. And that's a good thing if you can keep on good terms. But there are those moving in who keep themselves more and more apart these days. They're coming from the cities. They can't take it anymore, and I don't know how you can. Let's look at Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 6. Matthew 24, 6. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. It's getting harder and harder, isn't it? We're watching them demonstrate on our campuses. We're watching people fight each other. The kids are growing up not even knowing. You know, 8 years ago, 6 years ago, those people that are demonstrating on the campus didn't even know to vote. They didn't know anything about politics. They weren't interested in it. So how good is their history? How can they know about where Israel came from? How can they know where the United States came from? We're not even teaching that in schools. And none of them except us know about this blessing being given to us as part of Abraham's blessing to us, who we are. The 4th of July being a real day for us. That's the day that the younger brother conquered the older brother in the Bible. And we became a nation. They don't know any of that stuff. Well, we don't know. Now we don't even know our neighbors. So we're going to hear roars, wars and rumors of wars. These things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. We keep thinking, well, when is it? For nation shall rise against nation, cultures against cultures, and kingdoms against kingdoms. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in all kinds of places. You turn on the news, what do you see? And these are the beginnings of sorrows. Kids in the back of the car, are we here yet, Dad? Are we there yet? How much closer? Are the thoughts of men continually evil now? More and more this is so. Go down to verse 21. And then shall be great tribulation that was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Well, we're not there yet. It isn't where you can't buy something, that you have gold You might have silver, you might have money, and there's nothing to buy. And you're hungry. We're not there yet. And it says, and except those days shall be shortened, there shall be no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Now we'll go, so I'm going to have to ask you, are you still on the elect? Do you consider yourself one? You know, an elect is like a wheat and a tare. And I've said this before. A tare looks around, he puffs up and says, I'm a wheat. You know what a wheat does? The wheat's the one that God's working with. He's constantly looking around saying, am I okay? Am I doing the right thing? What do I need to change? Even Paul said, I don't know if I can apprehend, if I'm have apprehended this position, if I'm going to make it. He didn't know. And we need to conduct our lives that way. Keep looking, because if you think I got it, be careful. Matthew 24, verse 27, for as lightning comes out of the east and shines even to the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. I was wondering, how is that going to be? How will that be? For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. All of a sudden, Jesus Christ is going to return. And just as ravens and vultures circle dead carcasses, it'll be so with those that have waited too long and are just about spiritually dead. Look up and see if you're being circled right now. Do you think you have time to change because you know that some of the signs will be and that you know what the prophecy might be and when the future might come? Where is your faith now? Again, are we there yet? No, but if our thoughts are on striving, surviving, and eating, where will our faith be? Remember, we read about prayer and about meditating on the law and gaining understanding, which will lead to lasting belief. When your trials come upon you, prayer is your first line of defense. We all kind of do that. When you lose a trial, prayer is your first line of defense, isn't it? When you're persecuted, prayer is your first line of defense. Right up until the trouble of the world, when you are persecuted, you've got to keep right in the front of God continually. And here's why. Let's look at Luke 18. Luke 18. We're just about done. Matthew, Mark, Luke. Luke 18 and verse 7. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with him? Even though he has to put up with things you do, but you're trying. You're looking and you're crying and sighing. Isn't he going to avenge you? I tell you, he will avenge you speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Start now by coming before you, God, until he's tired of you. Can you do that? Can you make God tired of you? I don't think you can. We need to have the belief that we'll endure. Acting isn't going to save you. It's a real and continual prayer before you, God, day and night, until after a time God says, speedily, and you're taken out, or it ends. We just had Mr. Evans. We all know about Don Evans. God took him away. He didn't have to face this stuff anymore. And that man was a worker. And he faced hardship and he overcame things physically. I'm amazed. This little wisp of a man. What a man he was. If you do this, God's going to find faith on the earth when his Son returns. And those will be the ones that when that guy asks, who are the believers? You'll know.